This is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are delighted that Dr. Paul Ekman is our guest. He has just summed up an awful lot of 40 years plus of research and thinking as a cutting-edge scientist in a book he calls Emotions Revealed. As I read the book, I kept finding you talking about being gripped by emotions, as if there was this monster out there that was holding me over which I had little or no recourse. Is that in fact the case with our emotions? Is it that kind of powerful over us, or is this what you're trying to say? Yeah, they're powerful and rather than but?
Well, emotions do, for at least a moment or two, take us over and run us. And they run us to act in a way that in our own life history has been most successful in the past.
So
now that may work perfectly or may be totally inappropriate. You have to remember that probably the things that have the most impact are the things that we learned the earliest in our life. And when we learn things early, we're rather defective learners. So we may have a lot of stored distortions, or we may have had the misfortune of being brought up in a dysfunctional family, and so some of the ways we've learned to act and behave are not going to be very useful to the functional situation we're in now. So sometimes our emotions are the best guide in the world, and sometimes they aren't. And what we want to do is, I believe, is to develop what I call attentiveness, to be sufficiently attentive or sufficiently in the moment that we can realize when an emotion is beginning. We can take probably the least skillful step of simply saying, I'm out of here. It's the old count to 10, or the even more extreme is, I'm out the door. I'll see you later. Or I better go and really listen to some good music because I need to get cheered up. Where are we going to intervene? We may be able to do a lot better than that. We may be able to learn to simply realize that's not working, or that is, and that's just exactly what I want to do. It's the right thing to do. It really fits. We're each so very different. What we each need to do, though, is to have more use of our awareness of what we're feeling at the moment so we can guide it in a way that will be most useful to us and to others.
Part of this, you're describing something that is it sounds like almost hardwired, the evolutionary piece of this and the importance of emotions. And then another piece of it, or an accretion that comes from the life experience, that the life, particularly I would think when you're very young and don't have the critical faculty, that there's a tendency to absorb the behaviors and the triggers that are common in that environment. And presumably even as you get older, you still would tend to adapt, learn from the environment around you. So it's sort of a weird variation on you are what you eat, you are what you are a part of. And I would assume that's part of the awareness you're talking about, that somehow or other having a sense that of what is appropriate, and this goes back to Aristotle, what is appropriate emotion in the specific context you're in, but also the context in which you put yourself on an ongoing basis, who are your friends, who are you hanging out with? Because it would seem that that's very important in that development of emotions.
Well, that's very true. And, there are a number of things we can do to become more emotionally attentive. One of the things that maybe isn't so obvious, a lot of my work has been on the recognition of how other people are feeling from facial expression. And I've developed specific tools, and they're in the new book and in CDs, that allow you to know, be a much better observer of others. Now, that does help you understand how another person feels, but it helps you understand what you're feeling.
As well?
As well, because I can't see my expressions. You do. I get to see from your emotional reaction to me, that can bring to my attention how I'm feeling, what's going on. It can alert me. You can provide a source for me.
That's a curious feedback. I don't think any of us think about that. I mean, empathy is you want to have a sense of, well, you know, be nice to Bill because he's having a bad day. But you're saying that I'm learning from that as well as being nice to him?
Absolutely. So when I look at Bill right now and I see that look of a slight perplexity on his face, then that tells me, gee, maybe he's a little uncertain about what it was I just said. Okay, he's providing feedback immediately. If I saw Bill was just showing a little bit of disgust, I would wonder, what did I do that was offensive? So it's always, I wasn't aware I was being offensive, but maybe I was being offensive in what I was saying or how I was saying it. You're biting your lower lip at the moment, so I'm beginning.
I want to say something. but that sense of, oh, we're social animals. We really do learn from each other. There's this notion that emotions are infectious.
Yes.
Is that part of what you're saying?
Yes, although we may not feel the same emotion. Sometimes we do. There are two emotions that are the most of, well, they're all could be. Under the right circumstances, we can all get terrified and increase each other's terror. That's why you're going to have a lot better time seeing a terrifying movie at a movie theater than at home. It's not just it's a bigger screen.
Oh, it's more fun because everybody else is scared too?
That's right. Anger can be is unfortunately very infectious. It takes an enormous skill to not return anger with anger. And particularly if the anger that's directed at you, you think is unjustified or self-righteous. It's like an enormous Zen exercise to be able to learn how to let that anger go past on the side of you, to see it as a rolling ball of barbs and thorns, and you're not going to let it catch you. You're going to see it. You're not going to ignore it. You're going to respond because that person is perceiving you as a source of trouble, but you're not going to respond with anger. Sometimes you can do it.
That sounds really hard.
It is hard, but it feels wonderful when you do it. And, of course, enjoyment, amusement. You know, again, you go to a comedy club, and that comic's a lot funnier than you just watch him on the tube, particularly if you're watching him alone. So all the emotions are infectious. But I wasn't talking just about that. It's very important to be attentive to how others are feeling because you'll be able to have any relationship that matters requires that you understand and care about the feelings of the other person. Because the feelings of the other person also tell you about the impact you're having on them. And that can serve to bring to your attention the emotions that you're having that are causing that impact. So they, in some sense, they're not a mirror in the sense that they're having the same feeling, but if you see sadness on your child's face when you're talking to them about something, say, well, what have I done that's making them feel sad? If you see fear on their face, what is it going to bring to them? So there's a whole variety, this back and forth, moment to moment thing. There's many reasons for wanting to be a more skillful observer of others.
It sounds like, in a way, an additional way of generating intelligence about what's going on in the world around you, in terms of what people are saying. That it's not just the words; it is the way that they say them. It's their facial expressions, their gestures, as they are saying them. It sounds like it conveys a lot more information just than the words themselves.
Yes, I mean, you always want to hear the words because we can't, you know, emotions don't tell you their source. So the fear of being disbelieved looks just like the fear of being caught in a misdeed of some kind. So when you see an emotion, you have to try to find out what's the source of it.
And that's not trivial.
Not trivial at all. I mean, if you're looking suddenly disgusted, it might be that you're disgusted about something you did this morning before I ever came on the scene. I might not be offending you. You might be disgusted with yourself about something totally from a different situation. But I could, if I see it, it could, one, cause me to reflect upon myself. It might also, depending on my relationship with you, if it was the kind of close relationship, I might say, Paul, something wrong, something bothering you, Paula? It depends. I might not if I don't know you very well. How we use the information we can derive from others' expressions, face or voice, really very much depends on the kind of trust that exists in that relationship.
I have been literally voiceless for the last 5 days, and to not have that tool has been a very peculiar experience. The voice also, it isn't just the facial things.
Absolutely.
That you've worked so hard on. The voice also really is a player here, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it's a parallel system. It has the same information as the face.
Same.
It's actually, for the enjoyable emotions, it's the voice that tells us which one it is, not the face. You see the same smiling countenance for all the enjoyable emotions, but think of the difference between the sound of relief and the sound of amusement. That's all in the voice. So it's the voice that tells you which enjoyable. Faces, though, has certain virtues that the voice doesn't, in the sense that if you don't speak, I don't hear anything. I don't get that voice, but the face is always there. When I'm talking to you, as I'm just doing this moment, you're responding to me facially, even though you haven't said a word back that moment. So I know how you're feeling right at that moment, even without a word. But if there wasn't the voice, my God, parents wouldn't be able to raise children. They'd have to have to be watching the kid. You couldn't, you know, the voice grabs you from another room.
This is Dr. Paul Ekman. We'll be back with him in just a moment. Please do be with us when we return.